We can learn a lot from Joseph about how to resist sin. Today on Hope from the Word.
If you want to resist sin, you need to pray. You need to understand what sin is. You need to let your faith be known. You need to have a proper understanding it's wicked. You need to have a proper understanding of who you're sinning against God. You need to run from it, be in a different place, flee from it, keep busy. He was always doing his job. He was keeping busy. He didn't sit around all day eating bonbons, thinking about maybe he might go to bed with her. What would that be like if I did? Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. He didn't make a list with two columns, the benefits of sinning and the benefits of not sinning, debits and credits, see which one outweighs the other. He didn't do that. He was always doing his job. He was never alone with her. He didn't allow himself to be in that situation.
Welcome to Hope from the Word with Pastor Bill Lubkamin from Calvary Chapel of Marlton. We're glad you could join us as we continue to study through the Bible. Today we return to Genesis chapter 39 for more on the life of Joseph. He had been sold off as a slave by his jealous brothers and became a servant in the home of an Egyptian named Potiphar. Joseph remained faithful to God through it all. Now, in chapter 39, Joseph gets another extreme test of faith. Here's Pastor Bill with a message entitled, Flee from Evil.
Joseph basically had the care and the trouble of running the household. And at this time, servants and whatever, I don't know, maybe it was like the White House or some big mansion where you need a staff to run it. He was in charge of all that stuff. All Potiphar cared about was when he came in, if he had food to eat. That was it. Everything else was on Joseph's shoulders. He trusted him completely, and that's quite a compliment. Now, verse 6b. Now, Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Look, the King James says he was handsome in form and appearance. Only David and Absalom were the only other two guys in the entire Bible that there's a comment made about how good-looking they were. And in verse 7 here, notice where sin begins. It begins with the eyes. Job 31:1 says, "I made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a girl." We need to be thinking about making a covenant with our eyes. And that's basically what Joseph had done. He didn't read Job 31:1. But he did it anyway. And his master's wife took notice of him. He was well built. He was handsome. She wanted to sleep with him. But he refused. You know, Satan tempts you, and he wants you to think it's unique. He wants you to think you're the only one who ever been there and done that. He wants you to think you're the only person that ever had that temptation. No one else has ever encountered that before but you. Nobody would ever understand what happened. But the fact of the matter is, it isn't that way at all. If you look over in 1 Corinthians here, chapter 10, verse 13, it says, "No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out, so that you can stand up under it." Hey, first thing you got to know here is when you're tempted, it's common to man. Everybody gets tempted. You're not the only one. You're not the first one. It's not the worst for you. None of that stuff. The difference here between Joseph and a lot of other people is Joseph simply refused to get involved. He refused to be dragged down. It says here, "God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you could bear." And the first thing that happened here is Joseph, he bore it. He's put up with it, right? He refused. He said, with me in charge, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Now look, he's given me all this stuff. How could I do that to him? You really think that God would have continued to bless Joseph if Joseph had not passed this little test here? Joseph recognizes his blessing. And in verse 9, he even recognizes even more that no one is greater in the house than he is. And nothing has been withheld from him. He's free to go and come as he chooses. He can go to the cupboard, eat what he wants. He can delegate his job to the other servants. He's running the place there. And Joseph knows this is God's blessing upon me. Joseph knows he's being blessed by God. How would Potiphar know it if Joseph didn't know it? And he recognizes clearly, Joseph does, that such a sin would be against God. When he says, how then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? He has a proper idea here, an understanding of what sin is, and sin is against God first and foremost. Look, when you sin, you can sin against a lot of people, but God is the most important one that you're sinning against. Consider David and Bathsheba. David didn't read Job 31:1. He looked lustfully upon a woman, and he slept with her. He sinned against her. He sinned against her husband, who he had killed. He sinned against his army, who he had killed a guy. He sinned against the kid who wound up dying. He sinned against all kinds of people. But ultimately, sin is sin because it is sin against God. And that's the greatest part of it, because God is the greatest that there is. He comes first. And Joseph says, how could I do that? If you want to resist evil, if you want to flee from sin, the first thing you got to know is who you're sinning against. And it's against God. And it is a wicked thing to do that. And this guy, Joseph, didn't just resist once. He put up with this, it says, day after day. Look, he came at 17. He was probably there in the household for 10 years, plus or minus. I don't know when this started, but I know when it ended was when he got put in jail. We didn't quite get there yet. So, you can only assume this went on for a long time, day after day. Day in, day out, week in, week out, month and year after year, it goes on and on and on. And Joseph resisted. He refused to go to bed with her. And he didn't even want to be around her. He said here, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. You know, if you want to resist sin, don't be around the things that cause you to sin. Whatever they are in your life, you know what they are. Don't be around them. Go somewhere else. Do something else. Pray. Obviously, this guy was a prayer, I'm certain. He wouldn't have got through this if he wasn't. I'm certain that he let his faith be known. If they recognized God's blessing upon him for all these years, how could he not have shared his faith at some point with them? If you want to resist sin, you need to pray. You need to understand what sin is. You need to let your faith be known. You need to have a proper understanding it's wicked. You need to have a proper understanding of who you're sinning against God. You need to run from it, be in a different place, flee from it, keep busy. He was always doing his job. He was keeping busy. He didn't sit around all day eating bonbons, thinking about maybe he might go to bed with her. What would that be like if I did? Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. He didn't make a list with two columns, the benefits of sinning and the benefits of not sinning, debits and credits, see which one outweighs the other. He didn't do that. He was always doing his job. He was never alone with her. He didn't allow himself to be in that situation. One writer wrote that Joseph withstanding this temptation was as much an evidence of God's power as the kids in the fiery furnace. You know, we can look at that story about the fiery furnace and say, wow, three guys went in there. They were walking around. There's a fourth one in there. How many did we throw in? Three? I see four in there. And they're walking around and talking. And they came out and not a hair was singed. They didn't even smell like smoke. They didn't even have to change their clothes or take a shower. That was God's power. And this writer wrote, this is just as much an example of God's power, that he could live with this for all these years, do as much as he could to withstand it, in spite of that constant temptation. And look, the world is full of temptation today. You just have to put on the TV to see it. You can drive down the road, see it on the billboards. It's in magazines. If you go to the magazine store, you can't even browse the ham radio magazine because all the other junk that's there, that distracts you. You just go to the 7-Eleven to get a Slurpee and they have this stuff laying all around. There's all kinds of occasions to sin in the world. And whatever it is that you have a weakness in, don't go there. Don't be around that. Don't hang out in that place. Before you were saved, maybe you used to hang around with your friends and do certain things that are not productive for your Christian life. Don't hang around in those places. Don't do those things. If those friends are still doing them, then don't hang out with them anymore. That's what Joseph did. He refused to do it. Verse 11, one day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. Well, I wonder who arranged that. She called him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. This is the culmination here of her efforts. It's also the culmination of his. You know, his resistance, her efforts, they both culminated here on this day. I think you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out. It would have been relatively easy for her to send the other household servants over to Walmart to get some things so they wouldn't be there when he came in. So here, very likely, hey, I can't prove this. If you think it just happened, well, you can believe that. But it seems likely that she arranged it. And he comes inside, not knowing about it. He's coming in to do his duty. Maybe he's going to clean the house, take out the trash, balance the banking account. And she grabbed him. Come to bed with me. Boy, it would have been easy for him to do that. Nobody would have known. He could have kept his job. He could have stayed out of trouble. It was her last desperate attempt, and it was his culminating effort. What did he do? He ran. He got himself out of there. The King James says, he left the garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And I like that. He got him out. If I talked that way, my English teacher would have given me an F. But that's what he did. He ran. He left the garment in her hand, the coat, the outer garment, whatever it was. He left it in her hand, and he got himself out of there. No one else is going to get you out. Maybe that's why God gave us all 2 feet. Remember what we saw over in 1 Corinthians again. But when you are tempted, well, first of all, he will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear, and certainly that was true in Joseph's case. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up against it. And guess what? If no other way out seems apparent, you can always get out of there. There's always a way out. There's always a door. You can always leave. And that's what he did. He got himself out of there. God did provide a way of escape, and he took it. It would have been easy for him to say, oh, I had to do it. I had to sleep with her because what else could I do? She was my master's wife and all this stuff. He didn't do that. He got himself out of there. Verse 13, when she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. She knew where they were. She knew where to find them. They weren't around, but notice how quickly she could access them when she needed to. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. Were the other servants happy? Were they pleased? Were they in on it? Maybe they knew what was going on. I can see it both ways here, by the way. They might have liked Joseph because the Lord was blessing them and he probably treated them fairly. But they also might have hated him because he was in charge. It doesn't really say. But this, I do know this, this lie must have been really painful to Joseph. Here he was, after all he had been through, just being himself, being honest, truthful, not lying, this had to really hurt him. And it was not the first time his coat was used as a false witness about him. Remember, his brothers took his coat of many colors, dipped it in blood, tore it up some, brought it back to their father and said, do you recognize this? We found it out in the field. And at that point, that coat was used to convince his father that he was dead. Now here, this coat is used to convince Potiphar that he had tried to sleep with his wife. Verse 16, she kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. Here she is telling the same lie to her husband. Does he believe her or does he doubt it? I don't know. Does he even really know his own wife? Maybe he knows her better than we think. Maybe he knows what's really going on here. Does he put Joseph in prison just to save face, or is it to keep his wife happy? Why doesn't he have her executed? It's hard for me to believe that a slave in Egypt who does this to the wife of a high official, it's really hard to believe that he's not executed. Now, I think maybe this guy just had a hint that, maybe the guy is innocent. But to save face in front of my wife and all the other household servants and the neighbors who heard about it, to save face, I have to do something, so I'll put him in prison rather than kill him. I don't know. You can speculate on that if you like. Verse 19, when his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. I'm not sure if he was angry at her or angry at Joseph. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, interesting thing happened. The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Man, it's like reading the beginning of the book over again. The Lord was with him, the Lord was with him. He was successful, he was successful. Potiphar saw it, the warden saw it. Potiphar put him in charge of the whole household, the warden put him in charge of the whole prison. Isn't that amazing? He's successful even in prison. God's blessing is just upon this guy. That's an interesting way of looking at it, right? God's blessing is just upon this guy, period. He passed his test with flying colors here. Isn't it interesting, though? He wasn't doing anything wrong when he was younger. I mean, he was just being honest, sharing the dreams. He wasn't his fault that his father treated him differently. He was only a kid. He winds up in one situation, and he's honest and true and faithful to God, and he winds up in this situation, and he's going to be honest and true and faithful to God again. It hardly seems like the proper reward. It hardly seems fair. But God is just continuing to train him up in all kinds of ways to do administration. Look, here he was a kid. He knows how to administer a household. Now he's learning how to administer a prison. Next, he's going to be administering all of Egypt as the greatest man in Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. God was working in these situations. God always went on ahead of him. He made sure that he got the training that he needed, on-the-job training, hard training. But the training made him into the man that he became. And we can also see here, God can provide friends for his people wherever they may find themselves. Like I said before, I've been in the hospital a few times, mostly one time for several days, other times just for the day. And always it seems like God has somebody there. You know, sitting there getting in, talking to the next person, where are you from? You know? And they're from this church or that church, whatever. Just, I could spend all day talking about the things that I saw there. One nurse, I was sharing the Lord, read the Bible. The next person said, "Oh, don't pay any attention to her. She's always reading the Bible." Well, that sounds pretty good. So where does this leave us? What can we do with this? What is the lesson for us here? And I hope you can plainly see it. Joseph resisted evil. He resisted temptation. He resisted sin, a wicked thing against God, his father. And he resisted it over and over again, day in and day out. Ultimately, he ran away from it. He was so concerned about sinning against God, it bothered him so much that he ran away from it. He got himself out of there. No doubt, as fast as he could. My prayer is that all of us here today, that we would be just as diligent in avoiding sin, in avoiding evil. So many folks today in the world, even in the church, they want to engage in evil, or at least play around with it, dabble with it, experiment a little with it. They ask questions like, how much can we drink without getting drunk? Or how many drugs can we do without becoming an addict? Or if we only steal a few pencils from where we work, that's not really being a thief because, well, they really don't pay us enough there anyway. If I only watch a few bad TV shows, only with a few bad parts in them, You know, it won't be too bad. I'll draw the line somewhere. I'll only sleep with my girlfriend if I really love her. I'll only do a little bit of this or a little bit of that. It seems like nowadays everybody wants to test it. You know, that's what kids do, right? Mom, can I do this? No. Dad, you know, same question. Make sure that you're out of earshot of your wife so that, you know, you didn't hear the answer there. That's what kids do. We're not supposed to do that anymore. We grow up. We want to avoid sin. We want to avoid evil. We don't want to find out how close we can get to the cliff without falling over. That's dumb. You know, we were at the Grand Canyon. My daughter wouldn't go near the edge. They don't have a railing there. Josh was testing it a little bit. I was kind of, you know, kind of halfway between going close to the edge. It's pretty scary. It's pretty far down. At this one outcropping, it was jutting out there. There was a fence at that spot, a railing. And we were there, and there was a ranger who was out further on top of this rock thing, picking up coins that people throw over. And he was wearing a harness with a rope and everything. And the people there were asking him, why are you bothering to pick up a few lousy coins? Just leave them there. He said, because if we don't pick them up, other people try to get out here to get them. And then they fall down and get killed. And someone said, well, how many times have you, you know, recovered people who died? He said, well, I've been working here at the Grand Canyon 3 years, and I've participated in 13 times bringing up dead bodies. 13 times. No doubt these were people who wanted to see into the Grand Canyon, and they wanted to get as close to the edge as possible. And I saw some of the folks taking pictures out there. They're smiling, and someone's taking their picture, and they're right on the edge, and it's a mile down. A mile. You know, crazy to get as close to the edge as you can without falling off. It doesn't make any sense. But people do it in the world all the time, and even Christians. The emphasis today seems to be on how much we can get away with, not how much we can avoid. What are the limits? How far can we press them? How close can we get there to the edge? Risky, dangerous. Be careful. What a sad commentary that is on the state of affairs today around the world and even in America. And the sadder still, it's even the state of affairs in the church. Let's get saved. Let's do the minimum we can to keep God happy. Let's press the limit. Be right on the edge. Live life on the edge. This is what Spurgeon said more than 100 years ago. When I regarded God as a tyrant, I thought sin a trifle. But when I knew him to be my father, then I mourned that I could ever have kicked against him. When I thought that God was hard, I found it easy to sin. But when I found God so kind, so good, so overflowing with compassion, I smote upon my breast to think that I could ever have rebelled against one who loved me so and sought my good. My prayer today is that we would all realize even more and more each day just who our God is, how much he loves us, and what he has done for us. And my prayer is that we would recognize sin for what it is and not want to sin against the one who created us, who made us, who has done so much for us. May God grant us the wisdom to know the truth and the strength to carry it out.
Joseph resisted evil. He resisted temptation. He resisted sin. We hope that encourages you to be faithful to God when temptation comes knocking on your door. You've been listening to Hope from the Word. We're currently in Pastor Bill Lubkeman's Through the Bible series. If you'd like to hear this message again, you have several options. Visit our website at ccmarlton.org and download the Hope FM app to your smartphone or tablet. Or look for us wherever you find your podcasts. You can also request a CD copy by calling 856-983-1662. Again, that's 856-983-1662. If you've been thinking about visiting Calvary Chapel of Marlton, where Bill serves as pastor, we'd love to have you. Our service times are on Sunday mornings at 10. We also meet midweek on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. You can also live stream from home when you visit our YouTube channel at Calvary Chapel of Marlton. For more information, go to ccmarlton.org. We hope to see you soon. Before the day is done, we'd like to connect with you, share a praise report, prayer request, or what you're learning from this series. You can easily email us from our website, ccmarlton.org, or just call us at 856-983-1662. There's more to come from Bill's Through the Bible series, and we'll have that for you next time on Hope from the Word with Pastor Bill Lubkamin. This program is brought to you by Calvary Chapel of Marlton.